Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
Or 321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at espnau.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Friday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well on a, it's an August Friday, but it's almost the weekend, so that's good. And hey, it is almost class time for Auburn University students. The next weekday,
that's right,
is the first day of class. Monday is the first day of class. Everybody is pretty much back in town now. So be aware of that. If you're trying to get somewhere, it's going to take you a little longer to get there. And there will be quite a few folks who are not familiar with where they're going, so be patient. But the weekend's about here.
That doesn't stop, by the way. The you know, folks wandering like they don't know where they're going, That's not just a first weekend of Auburn people are moving in thing, right? That's not a first weekend of class. That's going to stick around.
Oh, no. No, I mean, it'll get a little better because some people at least will know where they're going.
But it'll that's
why I added that part at the end. But yeah, it's not like, oh, a bunch of people are going to be gone. There are a few moms and dads that are in town.
And everyone's not, but
hey, guess what? We got football here in a couple of weeks.
And everyone's not going to magically learn where they're going by Monday.
No. And no, so they won't know it by Friday.
They won't know it by May, Bill. No. They won't know it by
some won't.
Some won't.
I didn't have any idea where some of my classes were when the semester was done. So, I probably should have made the attempt.
Yeah, I was learning about new buildings on campus as a senior, which probably, you know what I mean? Like that's
And how long have those buildings been there?
I mean,
the bad thing.
No, how long had I been there at that point?
Yeah, that's true.
So anyway, welcome students, I guess, with the classes starting on Monday and farewell to summer vacation for the most part. As we hard to believe we're over 2 weeks in. I mean, it was Thursday 2 weeks ago,
the first when
Auburn got started
right
with fall camp. And we've just
fall camp is pretty much done. I mean, now they start their regular work with school going on. Hugh Freeze said today they'll probably work a little on game number two this week, but they'll be doing more really the type of game prep that they will, and then it'll be game week a week from Monday.
We've been treated to a ton of access, so
oh, yes,
again, want to shout out to everybody in the Auburn Athletic Department for opening things up for us this, not just this fall, although it's been particularly this fall, I would say we've had an unbelievable amount of access, but all off season. I mean,
oh, yeah.
You know, during the two periods where practice has been going on, we've been able to talk to a lot of people, and that's not going to stop. Although, you know, after today,
the way it's going to be pretty much once we get into the regular season, it's going to be Monday interview, Monday Hugh Freeze, and then players on Mondays. And then we'll see how much, I mean, hopefully there's a little more, but I mean, that's going to be the standard. It's going to be on Monday.
I've been lobbying for a weekly Peyton Thorne, as long as he's, you know, QB1, the starter. I feel like that's, you know, not something that's all that uncommon in college football to have a quarterback who's going to be, you know, speaking with the media on a fairly regular basis.
Of course, once the season gets going, a lot of the times, I mean, he's going to be the first person folks go to post game.
It's true. So we'll have a couple of opportunities perhaps to talk to him. But you're right. During game weeks, Hugh Freeze talking on Monday, and then some players before they go into meetings.
Yeah, there'll be players in the lunchtime.
And we're getting the coordinators next week.
That is right. Yeah, next Wednesday, I believe we get coordinators.
All three coordinators: DJ Durkin, Derek Nix, and Tanner Burns, special teams coordinator. Going to be.
It's cool. We've had Durkin and Nix here over the last week and a half. We get them again as they're approaching really the season, and they've got things a little more narrowed down. Big scrimmage coming up tomorrow. Again, Hugh Freeze with a couple of interesting tidbits today. You know, we asked you yesterday, what's your biggest concern? Well, can we take
a bit of a victory lap here? Because I feel like we spent a lot of yesterday's show, and then Justin Ferguson and I recorded the Observer podcast right afterward. And I feel like we came to the consensus. I mean, because we've talked a lot about the lack of experience depth in the secondary. But I would add the caveat that a lot of teams, the best teams in college football, are dealing with questions about the experience of their second stringers in the secondary.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's
if
a position
that's your,
where...
If that's your biggest concern, then you're better off than a lot.
But we talked about the probably under-analyzed fact that one of the problems last year for the Auburn offense was pass protection by the offensive line. Like, you know, folks have focused in on the receivers and Peyton Thorne, deservedly so, because those are two groups that have to be. But you know, the receiver position has to be better for Auburn to take a jump in most ways offensively this year. And Peyton Thorne, you would think, you know, probably needs to be better than he was last year. But it feels like the offensive line probably needs to be better too. And we talked about that, you know, a good bit yesterday on the Drive and a good bit on the Observer podcast. And sure enough, Hugh Freeze talks about it. I feel like more today.
He sort of brought it up himself. He talked about how he really likes this team.
I'm not saying he's a listener. I'm not saying that, but
no, we're not
saying that.
No, we're not saying that either.
But he was. It was fascinating the way that I thought the most interesting stuff today.
Well, I mean, he said he's really pleased with this team and where they are right now, and he feels that the receivers are really stepping up. He said yesterday. He did say yesterday, but this week has been a very good week for the offense. And he said the receivers have stepped up. He likes everything he said. And the way he phrased this, he didn't say, I'm concerned about the offensive line. He said, the offensive line needs to get better. That's probably his biggest concern on offense. That got some folks wondering and thinking about it. And then he followed that up by talking about some young guys. Todd Johnson saying he's healthy now.
I'll give you the quote about the offensive line. He was asked about the progression throughout fall camp.
Mm-hmm.
Quote, the O-line probably is one of the tighter groups we have. I do think we have a ways to go there, and that's probably been my biggest worry about the offense right now, believe it or not.
Right.
I think our receivers are coming on fine. The O-line, it's just getting them to gel and get on the same page. Really happy with most of them up there. There's a couple spots we've got to become better. It's somewhat hard to tell when you're always thudding, but we're still making too many. We're not all on the same page. Connor Lue is very, very sharp, and he's making the right call. But somehow it's not translating all the time to every position there, so we've still got work to do there. I am optimistic that Tyler Johnson is now healthy, and I think he's got a chance to be really, really talented. I'll tell you, Chambers has been a very, very good late pickup to help us. We're also debating Wade, where it's best for him to play, so we're still in the process of figuring that out, but we do need to compete there. Unquote. That was Hugh Freeze talking about the offensive line today.
Yeah, and I knew I was sitting next to
him. And that felt tackle-centric when you think about the players he named.
It did.
Right?
Now, here's something interesting. A couple of things. All right, so
Wade's also a guard. So it's like he mentions Wade.
Dylan Wade has been a guard, and as of the end of practice today, he's been nothing but a guard. Today, all right, so we got to watch a little practice today, and then among the seven players that were brought out.
To my knowledge, I want you to finish that, but to my knowledge, Hugh Freeze's answer today was the first real talk from anyone about Wade moving back to tackle. Anyone as far as a coach, we've talked to Thornton a couple of times.
Well, here let me tell you what we heard today. Because today we got Tate Johnson and we had Percy Lewis. And one comment that was just made was that the problems have not been anything athletically both of them were talking about. It's been communication and everybody being on the same page. I was really interested. Percy Lewis today said he worked for the first time all fall a little at right tackle. And he said that's the first time he's gotten any work at right tackle. And he was asked, well, who stepped in while you were working at right tackle? And it was Tyler Johnson. Dylan Wade apparently got looks at both guards today. He did not work at tackle. He has not worked at tackle yet. So, and, I mean, there's still
and,
a little.
And here's the thing. I misspoke earlier when I said that Hugh Freeze's answer was the first talk of Wade playing tackle. That's incorrect because Hugh Freeze did not say Dylan Wade was playing tackle.
No.
I'll give you the answer. I'll tell you exactly what he said again. Quote, "We're also debating Wade where it's best for him to play."
Yes.
Unquote. That's all he said.
Well, I mean,
that could be both guard spots. That could be. And Tyler Johnson being the first name. Well, he mentions Connor Lue. And in fact, to your point about what he just said about Percy Lewis and Tate Johnson, Connor Lue, Hugh Freeze says, quote, "Connor Lue is making the right call, but somehow it's not translating all the time to every position there."
Right.
Unquote. So it's, you know, they're figuring out where, and if Percy is sliding over to the right, and presumably Tyler Johnson is moving in and playing left tackle with Percy Johnson.
Well, one thing we have seen all fall is when, you know, the next guy after Percy has been Totter. Totter has been number two there at left tackle fall.
That would put Tutone Miller under the gun, right?
Well, but Percy said today he was working with the second unit at right tackle.
Interesting. So it wouldn't be it would be Percy and Tutone competing for one spot at right tackle
I guess they just want to look. The thing is, they've got a little time now, and they want to look and just make sure. I mean, Percy was saying, hey, look, he's been a left tackle his whole life. And he said, I've just got to think of everything being opposite because it's the first time he'd ever been over there. And you lead, you push, you do everything with the other hand and foot. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes.
What does the Bill Cameron depth chart?
I haven't changed it yet. Because the other thing I heard from one of the things Tate was saying.
Because that's what folks need to know.
I mean, well, the other thing Tate was saying is, it's just everybody understanding and getting on the same page on every play. It's not that he didn't feel like anybody couldn't play and could and wasn't, you know, was falling behind because of ability. It's just everybody understanding the call and doing the right thing on each play.
Okay, so left to right at the moment, you're starting offensive line.
I've still got Percy Lewis with Totter Johnson really coming on.
Nipping at his heels.
Yep.
You've got Dylan Wade next to him.
Dylan Wade is still next to him.
Connor Lue has been the starting
Connor
center
Lue is
all
the
off
center.
Season.
Jeremiah Wright at the right guard and Tutone Miller at the right tackle. But, yes, it's a lot less. I mean, we've been talking all fall about, well, one thing that appears set is that starting offensive line. Maybe not.
Not so fast, my friend.
Maybe not. I mean, we'll see. I mean, what we saw today still had everybody in those same spots.
If Dylan is moving to the other guard spot, who's stepping in and playing?
I mean, what we didn't hear is I don't know if they're looking at both guards at both sides or
Tate, who could also be in the mix there, your backup center.
Or Joyner. Joyner is a guy we've heard has had a really, really good fall.
Joyner and Tate would seemingly be options
I've got a feeling that Tate, being your backup center,
they would rather not have him.
I mean, could play there, and they know he can play there, but I think he probably is locked in as your backup at center.
That's true, but if there's a belief that Tate's one of the five best or one of the two best options at guard,
yeah.
I don't know if the fact that he's the backup center would hold
tomorrow
them from,
could be really interesting from that perspective. Yeah. I would imagine they'll continue to look at some guys and see how that is. The other thing that
I've seen Tate as sort of an underdog in that battle compared to Dylan Wade and Jeremiah Wright and I guess now Braden Joyner, who has entered the fray.
Hugh Freeze really likes Tate Johnson. We've heard that a few times. He talks about what a leader he is and how he understands everything. And
if communication is a problem, having a second center on the field might be somewhat beneficial, especially somebody lining up next to, you know, if he's next to too taller Percy or whoever's, if you've had issues with communication on that side, again, I can't speak to exactly how this, you know, how they're going to do it. But you would think that having a second center and somebody who is as familiar with the calls that Connor is making as the guy who would have to make them in Connor's place in the event of an injury, you would think that might help things But again, it's going to come down to who are the two best options. You know, who are the best options at left and right guard.
What's the best group? I mean, you really need a tight group, and that's what I think they're trying to get right now. There obviously are some missed communication at times, leading to busted plays. So that's what they got to get straightened out. The one thing, I mean, and there may not be a change. I mean, it may wind up that everybody is right where we thought they would be. The one thing that will be determined.
We should mention Ronan Chambers.
Yeah, he mentioned that he said he's been a very good late pickup.
Yes, and he's somebody who has been running as the backup.
He's the number two right tackle.
Yeah, he was running as the backup right tackle. Right. I don't know how much left tackle he's played or if he would be an option depending on what they're moving things around.
I think right now they're just working him and liking what they see with him as a backup right tackle.
I think they like what they have and a guy that they might have to go to if the first options don't necessarily work out.
You know, one thing that there will be a decision on here really soon. It sounds like the decision's about made, and that is who is the number two quarterback. Hugh Freeze said today that he, Kent Austin, and Derek Nix are pretty much on the same page with who the number two guy is, but they want to wait until after the scrimmage tomorrow, and they want to tell the players first. And I really appreciate that. You've heard of instances where someone lets it out and the players that are involved don't even know till they read about it or see it, you know, in the on the internet or something.
Although if you're the presumptive backup, you probably don't want to have thrown. You probably don't want to turn.
Don't want to go out and have a terrible day tomorrow.
Yeah, and I don't know how any of the quarterbacks did today outside of the time we got to see them. But it's, you know, you probably don't want to. Probably don't want to turn the ball over today or tomorrow if you're leading in that, and you probably don't want to do that either if you're the third guy.
I think you probably got a pretty good idea if you're the guys battling. You may feel like you're ahead or you're behind, but regardless, for Holden Gerner and Hank Brown, today's practice and tomorrow's scrimmage are really, really big because even if you feel like you're a little ahead, you don't want to go out and stink up the joint tomorrow. You know, because you feel like, even though I'm ahead, if I have – so there's some pressure on both those guys.
Oh, I think absolutely. I mean, that felt like as firm as mm-hmm. Peyton's grasp on the starting job was, it felt like the, you know, one of the hotter competitions on the offense was who's going to emerge between Holden and Hank. And it seems like we're going to get an answer on that pretty soon. So Hugh Freeze is going to tell – the players
right.
before he makes his decision. If you, Bill Cameron, had to guess as to which one of the two, understanding it's a guess and not insider information as to who has won the competition.
Well, I'll tell you this. I was just asking some of the guys that were there for the interviews.
Can you tell
afterwards,
us? Oh, no.
And I will tell you.
I was going to say tell us after the break, but I don't want to do that.
I asked eight different folks, and I got four Holdens and I got four Hanks. So, I mean, it's just like, we don't get to see the whole thing. We don't know. The only time we've watched the whole practice was Saturday, this past Saturday. And I thought Holden struggled early, but I thought he looked good late. Hank was better early, and then,
another late. One so, of those.
I don't know. I'm just going to just wild guess. I'll say Holden. I don't know.
Feels like it's been Holden more often than Hank as the next
since
guy up.
The end of the spring,
using my unscientific, as someone who's not qualified to evaluate these things, I feel like Hank's been a little sharper, but yeah, I don't
it,
know.
It
but
seemed
I don't,
like
I don't,
while we were out there today. That Holden was the second guy
but,
with the number twos,
yeah.
But that doesn't mean that he will wind up that way.
It's a cop-out to say. I feel like there have been practices where it seems like Holden's a little bit sharper and practices where Hank's a little bit sharper and practices where they both where you can tell, you know, there's a drop-off between Peyton to either of them. But, I mean, I think that it's going to be a tough one. And our prediction now could absolutely – change if things go sour in the next 48 hours, today's practice and the big one tomorrow.
All right, we're just getting underway here on the Friday edition of The Drive. Love for you to join in. Give us a call on the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar, and that number is 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors, an Alabama-based firm now hiring for great-paying, skilled trade positions. Call them up, 334-209-6355, to learn more. Southeastern Industrial Contractors also sponsors the podcast, available however you listen to podcasts.
We'll get to our first break of the afternoon, and we've got tons of audio, too. I mean, we have all kinds of audio from players and coaches. I was thinking about this. I was thinking about this earlier, that we've talked to over half the team, over half the roster. All right, we will see if we can check in with Barrett Salee when we come back here on the Friday Drive.
Four Seasons Federal Credit Union.
4321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Drive here on this Friday afternoon. Bill and Dan here in the studio, Drew at the controls. Let's get to the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar, and welcome in our good friend Barrett Salee. Barrett, how you doing, man?
I'm great. How are y'all?
Barrett, it is it's great to talk to you. We were just college football is days away at this point. I know you're making the trip over the are you still making the Dublin trip? Is that right?
Absolutely. Next Wednesday through the following Monday.
That's so cool. Looking forward to scouting
out golf courses and looking good.
The next time you talk to us next Friday, it's going to be like 4 a.m. over there. Or
I guarantee you. I know this is unprofessional, but I will be a few Guinnesses then.
Oh man! Oh please! You know what? Hey,
well, you got to.
It might be like midnight when it. I think Ireland's about 7 or 8 hours ahead of us.
I think it's seven.
Please call us.
It'll just be 11:15
Barrett,
your time.
Please Skype us if you need to, if it's cheaper. But please.
I will do what I can.
Oh man, it'd be incredible to get a live drop in from Barrett in Dublin at 11:30 p.m. on a Friday night. That'd be sensational. We were talking a little bit of baseball before you joined, Barrett.
It's an interesting time in our world of Braves baseball, isn't it? That man, 3 out of 4, it should feel good.
Yeah,
it doesn't feel that good.
At a San Francisco team that has been playing pretty well.
Yeah, but to me, it just doesn't feel too good. It still feels like they're missing something.
Mm-hmm.
I need to see more of it. I need to see what happens now that Michael Harris is back. How much of a difference does he make? And I mean, it was good the other night. There's no doubt about it. But I just I've lost trust. I've lost trust, and it's going to be hard to get it back.
Those two teams in the West heating up the way they did, the Diamondbacks and the Padres, suddenly put it put the Braves on alert. Not only they already had their issues with the Phillies in the division, but then. Now the wild card is something that you don't want to let either of those leads get too big. I still like the Braves schedule the rest of the way. When you think about some of the teams that they've got, I think they'll have a chance, but they you don't want to let the lead get too large with either of those teams who are playing some of the best baseball in the National League right now.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that now I remember you guys asking me 3 months ago, hey, is this team have any chance of not making the playoffs? And I was like, nah, of course not. They'll make the playoffs. Not a big deal. And now it's like, oh, wow. We've already been out of the playoff race for a day or two. And I mean, now they better not falter. They better not have a homestand like they did a couple weeks ago where nothing just seems to go right, because it can put you out of the race really, really quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right. I mean, it's pretty critical from this point on. I mean, now they've got to keep people healthy. Great to have Michael Harris back, but Soler hopefully is just a day-to-day type thing. But man, they've had so many injuries they can't afford anymore.
It's a testament. It's no consolation. Braves fans probably don't want to hear something like this, but it's a testament to the organization that they can still contend for a playoff spot after losing players.
Yeah.
That they've lost to lose the 1-2 punch of Acuna
And Strider. My goodness.
I mean, most teams in the National League, 10-plus teams in the National League.
You lose your ace and the best player in the league.
You're down for the count. You're down for the count.
You're done.
The Braves are not down for the count.
It really is. It's been remarkable that they're even in this position. But still, I mean, I think right now we're kind of spoiled here. And that's okay because they have spoiled us. But yeah, you're right. For them to be in this position, it seems almost impossible.
Mm-hmm. All right. From that, we can sort of segue into college football, man. Every time I look at the headlines, I see another player, and it seems like quite a few of them in the Southeastern Conference going down with an injury and out for the year.
Yeah, it is unfortunate. You know, obviously Texas running back position's been hit the most. You know, I always hate that because I want to have the best players playing at all times. I want these teams to be at their best at all times. You know, and to have your season start out in a situation where it already has taken a toll, it's unfortunate. But you know, I think in the specific case of Texas, you know, they've built that depth. Jaden Blue's still there, but and so I think that it kind of goes to show you how well Steve Sarkisian has actually built that roster. Is that you can sit there and say, okay, legitimately, hey, with two guys out, you know, the position group's still kind of okay, or at least is not completely down for the count. So it does suck though when you have guys get hurt for the year. And for Missouri's case, losing an edge rusher, that's big because they need to create havoc in the backfield, that's how they were successful last year.
Oh yeah, I mean that's one of the things that. You know, Hugh Freeze again today talking about the concern for how physical can you get. But it's interesting. We talked to multiple players that have said, hey, this is as physical as they've been around. So cross your fingers when you're doing something like that. But you just try to get everybody, hopefully get everybody as healthy as you can to the season. What did you take? I mean, there was some initial just, oh no, that can't be the case. But I didn't see it as that big a deal where the CFP said conference championships aren't going to be used as a tiebreaker. I mean, they're already in there to determine who gets, you know, the top seed. So it didn't bother me that much. But I mean, what did you take from that statement?
Yeah. It didn't bother me either. I mean, like you said, you already have the top four seeds reserved for conference champions. So what are you going to do consistently, go down the list and say, okay, hey, the group of five champions deserve a multiple group of five champions deserve more of a say than other teams. That's not the case. But, you know, at the same time, I always, you know, say this with all the criteria that they use. It's all subject to debate, and everybody, like, every year is different, and those people in the room, they'll make up their own rules as they go along. They've done it in the past, they'll do it again. So, you know, it's the criteria, they're more guidelines than rules, and it's a moving target. Those goalposts move quite a bit.
All right, Barrett. Let's play a game I just thought of on the spot, Bill. And right. Barrett, you don't have to, but if you nail either of these, if you get a bullseye on either of these, you can take a victory lap later for it, Barrett. We have the AP Top 25. Got it earlier this week. I want you to name a team in the preseason AP Top 25 that will not make the college football playoff, and a team not ranked in the AP top 10, or a team not ranked in the top 10 of the AP top 25.
Don't go top 25.
Let's go. No, that's what I mean. Give me a team ranked in the top 10 of the AP top 25 preseason poll that will not make the playoff.
Okay.
A preseason top 10 team that won't make it, and somebody not in the top 10 in the preseason that you think will be in the college football playoff.
Okay, Penn State is out. Penn State being a top 10 team right now is insane. Like that is utterly insane. I guess it's just kind of a natural sort of response to just think, okay, they're always on the outside looking in, never good enough to be in there, but always kind of close. And, I mean, Drew Aller's not going to lead you to a playoff. There are different kind of quarterbacks, ones that can get you there, ones that can win it, and ones that can't even get you there. And Drew Lauer is the last of that group. Team that's not in there that will make the playoff is, to me, Oklahoma State. I know, what were they, 17 or whatever they were, 18?
17.
You're talking about a team that has five returning starters on the offensive line, the best, I think, player in the country in Ollie Gordon. You know, a quarterback in Bowman who's not necessarily a superstar, but certainly capable of leading them to a Big 12 championship. And anytime you have a Mike Gundy coach team that has veterans on it, and this team is, you know, that's when he strikes. That's when the Gundy special happens. So Oklahoma State, to me, not only do I think they're going to win the Big 12 and get in just with that bid, I honestly think they'll be a legit top 10 team anyway when all is said and done.
I mean, somebody's got to win the Big 12, and you would think that the Big 12 champion is most likely a college football playoff team. You know, whether that's, I think Utah was the highest ranked preseason Big 12 team, but you've still got Oklahoma State there. You got Kansas State. You got Kansas ranked in the preseason top 25. Yeah, you know, I think that picking a Big 12 team as the sleeper playoff team is probably a smart move. And you didn't even
don't lose sight of West Virginia. West Virginia, to me, I don't know. I think their odds are like plus 8,000 to win the Big 12 championship. That team is going to be really good. And they've got a quarterback in Garrett Green who might be the best quarterback in the Big 12. So when you're talking about Big 12 contenders, do not sleep on West Virginia. That's a good team.
What about Gus? Does Gus have a team that can challenge for the Big 12 title this year?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, look, KJ is the perfect quarterback for him, right? KJ Jefferson is exactly what Gus wants. He's got good receivers. I think the culture has been established. So at this point, with, you know, the Big 12 just sort of being up in the air, no one really has a clue as to what's going to happen. I absolutely would be on board with UCF. At least getting there, I think absolutely. And if you get to the Big 12 championship, I mean, you throw your hands up and say, I don't know who's going to win. Whoever gets hot for 60 minutes or has a ball bounce their way is probably going to take home the conference championship. So, no, I mean, UCF getting there, that wouldn't surprise me.
Talking with Barrett Salee here on the Friday Drive. Barrett, we had a little very informative session with the Auburn folks that are handling the helmet comm, the helmet communications for Auburn. And since then, when talking to the coaches, it's been sort of a mixed bag as they approach the season with the 15-second cutoff and how you're going to do it. Because in college, you're going to see quite a few programs that might be able to stay in communication until the ball snap. Because you're going to see a lot of schools that'll snap the ball before that 15-second mark is up. So it's going to be really interesting to see the tactics that go into this. You don't want to try to hold the other team. You want to snap the ball while you're still talking. It's going to really be interesting to see this coming into college football.
Yeah, it is. You mentioned, you know, the up-tempo teams and how they operate. You know, I think this is almost going to
slow them down.
That, you know, or replace that dummy count, right, where you speed up, you get to the line of scrimmage, and then everybody kind of looks to the side. This is going to kind of replace that, right? You know, you're going to get to the line of scrimmage, and the coaches will see what's happening on defense and down the defense and change the play, talk to the quarterback, like, hey, look at that, you know, that corner might be blitzing, you know, whatever. And yeah, there's going to be different ways to use it. And I think up-tempo teams are, they're going to be approaching it in different ways. Mm-hmm. And by week two or week three, there's going to be, you know, a consensus on how things operate. But right now, I think it's going to be trial and error. I think that's been a big focus. I know it's been a big focus in fall camp for a lot of these teams, how to operate, how to you know, live in a world that's completely different. So for Auburn, you know, Auburn likes the tempo. It wouldn't surprise me at all if they not only rely on Peyton Thorne to you know, make the right reads, but also, you know, teach them on the fly, which is a good thing.
And we heard DJ Durkin said this week that it's really not going to be, he doesn't think it's going to be that much of a factor for them, because since very few teams huddle up, his defense isn't going to be able to get the signals as quickly, and they're still spread out, so they're still going to have to be signaling from the sidelines, even though they're able to be in the helmet of one of the players.
Yeah, I mean, and defensively, you know, I think Well, ultimately for me, early, I think you're going to have defenses play very vanilla because, you know, that you can obviously play fast as well and get signs in and everything. But I think that defenses are going to be on their heels a little bit trying to figure out how this thing's actually going to work.
Mm-hmm. Barrett, always great to talk to you. Yeah, just hopefully we do get a chance to catch you from the aisle next week. Let everybody know what you got going on at all your different venues.
Yeah, you can read it. Outkick College Football Smothered and Covered is the podcast. Apple, Spotify, you know, Apple Rumble or YouTube Rumble, all that stuff. Got big news coming on Monday with the podcast, and then SiriusXM. We'll be doing the SiriusXM show from Dublin as well. That'll be a 3 o'clock local time, 8 a.m. Central time show. So yeah, got a lot going on, and yeah, definitely looking forward to talking to you guys deep into the night, Dublin time next Friday.
Sounds great, man. Have a great trip.
Thanks, guys. See you.
All right, Barrett Salih joining us here on the Friday edition of The Drive. I do hope we can catch up with him. In the middle of the night.
If he can make it work, it's a long. Oh. That's an expensive call. Maybe he's gonna have to Skype. I'll reach out to him. But if he can make it work, that'd be an all-timer. I would love.
You're not kidding.
A middle of the night phone.
We haven't had an international guest
from Dublin
that I can recall.
Oh, that'd
be incredible. We've had callers international, but
I've never
had a guest.
Hawaii
held on for like 15 minutes.
Right. We've had callers from Hawaii before. I want to say.
Yeah.
With somebody
had one
that.
From Australia.
Yeah. Well, that's international, right? That's
yeah, but I'm not a guest though.
Oh, you're right. We never had a guest. You're right.
You know, it's been a caller. That's a little different.
Andy did not call us from Italy.
No, no, and that was intentional. All right, we'll get to our.
We tried.
Yeah, no kidding. We'll get to our next break. I'd love for you to join in again. 334-321-1390. Join us here on the Friday Drive.
And Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Friday afternoon. Got a little behind there, but didn't want to short our segment with Barrett Salih. So we'll have a short segment here, and then we'll get to our final break. Again, we'd love for you to join in. Anything on your mind? I mean, from
Dixie
some
Electric,
of the
plumbing and air has teamed.
Oh, that was shorter than I thought.
Year with the Food Bank of East Alabama and Montgomery Area Food Bank in an.
My goodness!
All right.
Yeah. Okay. We weren't planning on that short a segment. I wouldn't do that to you. I wouldn't say we're going to have a short segment and we're right back and like be gone. But just from some of the comments from Hugh Freeze today, again, he seems very pleased with where his team is. But they're trying to, you know, they're always trying to get better and have your team be as good as possible going in. Some looking at the offensive line to see if they can clean up some things and get even better.
Right, and so, yeah, I mean it's. I think competition on the offensive line was expected. It's a little bit surprising to hear. If there are shakeups to the starting lineup,
I'm sure are messages that are loud and clear to the players involved.
And it's interesting you got to talk to him today because I do have this feeling that if there's movement at guard, as much as I've always rooted for Jeremiah Wright, but I wonder if Tate Johnson would be the one pushing for that, like we were saying earlier. You've also got Braden Joyner,
If Dylan isn't at a guard, or if Jeremiah, I mean,
well, I would imagine
it seems like it's more the tackle.
Right.
It seems like tackle is the concern, and generally that is your major concern on an offensive line. Is you want that protection for the quarterback?
Yeah, the notion of Dylan moving from left guard to right guard makes me wonder if Jeremiah would move to left guard, or if that's about moving Jeremiah to a reserve role and having another guard step in and play left guard with Dylan Wade at right guard. I don't know. And then the question of who's that? Is that guard Tate Johnson? Is that guard Braden Joyner? Is that guard, you know? I don't know. But that's. And then I guess Tyler Johnson being a name that Hugh Freeze has mentioned so frequently makes you think.
We hear his name mentioned every time we hear talk about the offensive line.
Yes.
It's how boy, he's coming on, and he's really going to be a player.
You know what it reminds me of? Too Tall last year, and the way that it felt like they were constantly talking about Too Tall.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Even though he didn't slot in as – like, if you would – you're starting five after 14 days of fall camp last year on the offensive line did not include Too Tall.
I don't believe it did.
It had Wade and Britton as your two tackles.
So, I mean, we're at about that point
and
right
it,
now.
And
so.
it wasn't that long before they made the decision, you know what, this guy needs to be on the field. And I wonder if they're gonna decide that's also the case for Tyler Johnson and what the you know what the fallout would then be on the offensive line as far as who goes where.
Yeah, so that will be interesting to follow. Now, again, we got a chance to watch about 20 minutes of practice, and we saw some really interesting competition between the receivers and the defensive backs today. Man, I am very impressed with the entire receiving corps. We saw some really good catches out there and in very tight coverage.
You saw some nice-looking throws. Yes.
Yeah, because it had to be because the coverage was, for the most part, really tight.
As we were walking over after paying some pretty close attention to the offensive line.
The guy who got mentioned today as the most consistent of the young defensive backs, J.C. Hart, made a great play to break up a pass to Perry Thompson.
And we got to see, forget the defensive back who made the play on the ball, but Peyton got one right to was Robert Lewis on the. You know,
I think it was Jake Crawford.
The defense back who nearly got it. And it was because this is the Robert Lewis catch.
The one as we were
walking over, Robert Lewis catches one
on the far
side, and it was there was a very tight window. Might have been Jake Crawford who makes a good play on it, but it's just really good throw and a really good play by Robert Lewis, who is I feel like we didn't get to see full strength Robert Lewis earlier in camp. He is very quick, and you can see why. Even in a room loaded with talent, he's still consistently a guy who seems like he's in that first wave.
Interesting to hear. I mean, and we could actually run some of Hugh Freeze's comments a little later on, because he pointed out Sam Jackson had his best day of practice, and Camden Brown, and we saw Camden made a nice catch right as we got over in there as well. So, I mean, it's going to be tough to get this down to, you know, five or six guys, and then we're going to see at least one of those freshmen back as a punt returner, I think. We may see multiple of the freshman receivers getting opportunities in the early season as a punt returner. All right, we'll get to our final break of hour number one. Love for you to join in as we continue with the Friday Drive. Oh, we take break.
Dixie Electric Plumbing and Air has.
John might be back. He might be a little bit busy today, but we're hoping next Friday and Fridays during football season we'll have a talk with our defensive line coach here on the drive.
Absolutely,
Don Dunn,
our pit master and D line coach. So that's a guy that was dealing with the guys in the pits all the time, so that's perfect.
And he might be listening right now. You might be hearing from.
Yeah, I may. I usually do if we say something either that's extremely wrong.
So what do you want to let people hear in the second hour? Because I think Charles Kelly was outstanding.
I think that would be good. I mean, those guys. One thing we have heard from both secondary and receiver players and coaches is how good it is to work against the other group.
How about
that's something that, you know, we've talked on and on and on about the young receivers and the young secondary guys, but getting to work against the kind of players they are is really good for both sides.
How about Perry or Cam?
Oh yeah,
yeah. I mean, we had Ferg in the house yesterday. Didn't run any audio. I mean,
that's right. I got all four of the receivers. How about Malcolm?
You could run any of the four receivers. No dealer's choice there. If you want to pick
Malcolm, we haven't heard as much, you know, about him, and as a late arrival, he's been very impressive. So yeah, we've got quite a few options. Of course, we'd love to hear from you. You can call us on the drive hotline, 334-321-1390, as your calls do come first. But we've got plenty of audio for you just in case.
Yeah, we've had a ton of access from Auburn over the last couple of weeks to talk to, you know, a good percentage of the football roster and every single coach, plus multiple. I mean, we had Coach Freeze earlier today. There's also a press conference, you know, where we got to talk.
I'll tell you another really interesting player we heard from today is Philip Bleedy.
Yeah.
I mean, some a really good story and a very, very impressive young man. So we've got all kinds of audio that we can let you hear when we come back for hour number two of the Friday Drive.
Production. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in to hour number two of the Friday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio, Drew at the controls, and the second hour of the show brought to you as usual by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. You can join in as well here on the show. We've been talking, we've got plenty of audio that we can play for you, and I know that folks really like hearing the players and coaches, but we love to hear from you as well. And if you'd like, you can give us a call on the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. And that number is 334-321-1390.
You could also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors, an Alabama-based firm offering incredible opportunities, 334-209-6355, to learn more. And Southeastern Industrial Contractors also sponsors the podcast. We had Barrett Salee in hour number one, talking about a little Braves baseball, previewing the college football season, offering a couple of hot takes about his projected college football playoff field. And so that was a lot of fun. Check that out if you missed Barrett in hour one. You can check that out on the podcast.
So as I said, I mean, today we had we heard from Coach Hugh Freeze as the Tigers getting ready for what may be, I would guess it's going to be their final full scrimmage, and maybe their really only full scrimmage of the fall tomorrow.
This could be the last time?
Could be. Maybe, I don't know. I don't know.
They played Auburn. We mentioned that every time.
I just heard of
45 years ago.
Much better
or so
than the last show I saw. I got another one Monday though.
That's right, and you got a couple of shows coming up in this. Although
I've got a twofer.
It's
twofer
so
on Monday.
It's still, when you're talking about your concert lineup, the Aerosmith thing is still a bummer.
It is. I'm really sad about that.
I hope you find
sad for Steven Tyler.
Yes,
but I'm sad that I don't get a chance to see him live.
And again, I will say I think it's admirable that they're not just pushing him off the stage and finding some other guy who can scream and making him the...
It would be pretty tough to find somebody that could...
No, I agree. Can, I mean...
You know, sound like him.
Right, and I think, you know, he's you know, and fairly iconic with that band, and so yeah, I think it's probably right to end Aerosmith if he can't perform anymore.
Yeah,
but it's too bad, because yeah, it's right before you were going to get to see an all time group. But I'm sure you'll find something. You'll find a pinch hitter in there and something that you'll get to see. That's
one
be
less
pretty
thing
cool
that we're going to do on the open weekend there in October. So
are you thinking about going to any road games this year? Four?
Yeah, I've got tickets to Lexington.
Oh, okay. I was just in Lexington earlier this summer. Went to that family reunion on my dad's mother's side, the Raymond family reunion. I don't know if I told this story on the air. I found out that a distant cousin is radio play-by-play for North Carolina State. He's doing he does women's basketball and some baseball pregame. He had just gone to the College World Series with the team the week before, so it was fun to learn that there's another broadcaster in the family. But Lexington I had not been to that campus before, and it's beautiful.
Like it really
especially
is.
In the summertime, they have an enormous botanical garden, wildlife sort of preserve deal on camp. Not probably not a wildlife preserve. It's a botanical garden, but it's I'm like, you know, tigers living there or something. But it's no, they have a really nice a green space you can walk through, and lots of different things to see throughout that campus, and a surprisingly big city. You know, for mm-hmm. folks who, you know, if you haven't been to Lexington before, you haven't been in a long time. It's pretty cool, and I suspect there's going to be a pretty heavy Auburn presence at that game in October.
Yeah, so we've got Kentucky. I've got Kentucky tickets, and I got Alabama tickets because I know somebody will want to go there. Interestingly, nobody in the family wanted to go to Athens.
And that,
I don't think that's terribly surprising.
That's something that, you know, sort of an informal poll of people you know who have made that trip regularly. It feels like enthusiasm is...
Well, it's a couple of reasons. One, it's been more hostile. And secondly, it just hasn't been fun. The outcomes have not been... let's face it, they haven't been close a lot of the time.
I mean, I think as a novelty, seeing your team as a 17 or 21 point underdog on the road, you know, to hope you can pull off the upset, that's one thing. When it becomes routine, that is something that can start to wear on.
Well, but you haven't won in 20 years or coming up on 20 years there. Yeah. It's tough.
And so that's too bad, because that was always you could always count on a pretty heavy. And, you know, I still think for newer fans, you know, if you've never seen an Auburn game in Athens, you probably should check that out.
Might as well go watch, you know, a game between the hedges and get out as quick as you can.
Cross it off your list, you know, go see it. But I can understand for folks who have been to several, maybe there's not an intense appetite.
Yeah, we've been to quite a few.
And
they've gotten just worse.
Slightly
the more we go, the worse they've gotten.
Although, if they pull off the upset,
you're gonna wish
you were there. Yeah,
absolutely. I've got a pass.
Okay,
I've requested a pass. I just said nobody wanted to buy tickets.
I might apply for a credential. We could carpool. We'll make the trip.
All right, hour number two of the drive here on this Friday. And all right, we don't have any calls right now. Where do you want to go audio-wise?
So we've been able to talk with – I mean, we talked to the defensive position coaches Wednesday. Mm-hmm. We talked to the four receivers on Thursday, and then we talked to the players that we got to talk to earlier today along with Coach Freeze.
Have you sent Drew Malcolm?
I have not sent him Malcolm. Okay. He's got Charles Kelly, and I could probably get him Malcolm pretty quickly.
Okay. I was just thinking Malcolm is something that we could run that and be about on schedule.
Okay, I'll tell you what. Well, let me see if I can
next break, because Malcolm Simmons, the freshman from Alex City, has really stepped in. And well, you talk about hitting the ground running. That's one thing everybody just talks about, how fast he is, how he does everything fast. And he talked a little bit about that as well. He's also, as I said yesterday, I mean, he's a confident young man, and when you've got the ability that he has. I can understand that, but he had a couple of really big plays in the practice/scrimmage that we had a chance to watch last Saturday, and he continues to make big plays. I mean, this is a tight group of the four freshmen, the Freeze four, if you will.
Before I while I'm sending the file to Drew, do you want they made the Tiger Talk news official?
Oh yeah, I saw that Kirk sent the news out. Of course, if you've been listening to the drive, you know that Tiger Talk will be starting Monday night over on Wings 94.
Shout out to the soccer team too.
Huge,
shout out to Karen Hoppe and the soccer team
and her team. That is the largest margin of victory over a nationally ranked team at Auburn in Auburn soccer history.
What a way to start!
Zip.
Yeah, what a way to start a season. I mean, this is
Clemson.
Clemson,
number five team in the country.
Clemson, your preseason number five team. They were in the whatever they call the Final Four in the national semifinal in women's soccer last year in the NCAAs. And Auburn, from the moment the game started, looked like the better, more aggressive team, and that's that. To do that to a team like that, that's the kind of win that puts the conference on notice, puts the country on notice. So shout out to Karen Hoppe and her team for a huge win on the pitch last night. She's getting a lot of attention right now. We got to talk to the media earlier today.
And there were three members of the family, including the youngest, in attendance last night.
Outstanding.
She always has a good time.
Outstanding. Yes, yeah, you know, they one of our favorite Auburn fans was able to see that. And Coach Hoppe is going to be on Tiger Talk on Monday. I believe that's the one of the slated guests for or Monday's first episode.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes,
I believe she's going to be one of the guests for Monday's show.
All right. Do we have
Drew should have Malcolm Simmons.
Yeah,
is that right?
Right. One of the four freshman receivers who have really helped completely change the receiver room. Malcolm, one of the he was around in the spring, but he didn't get to go through spring practice. But it was great yesterday when we had a chance to talk to all four freshman receivers. I thought we'd let you hear some from the Alex City product. And all of these, there's usually a little bit of a pause because I don't want to miss the first question.
Well, usually there's a little. You might even hear Bill say the name of the player. Yeah,
a lot of times
recording.
I will say Malcolm's. You know, yeah, he'll say who it was in case I forget because I have to go in and change it. But
I'll talk about how it's going.
There we go.
How's camp?
It's been going good. Just coming out here, learning the offense, learning freeze, and just me being who I am.
You're making a pretty big splash here in camp. I mean, a lot of the players talking about you and your speed. I mean, how do you feel things are going for you?
It's been going good. My coach is just telling me, Coach Marcus and Coach Reed is telling me, just be me, play fast. Even if you mess up, just play fast and stuff gonna happen. And, I always had that mentality to come play fast and just do what I do most of the time.
How come? What did it mean to you to make those plays in the scrimmage in front of some people at Jordan-Hare Stadium?
Me coming in late, just making plays. Like, I'm always making plays, even if I'm not doing the right thing. But just come making plays, just put myself out there to let people know I am that guy. And I got some more guys around me. So we just come in and just work in day and out. And things like that going to happen.
Did Saturday almost give you a little bit more confidence, like just doing that performance or having that performance?
Yeah, it did a little bit. I was kind of nervous, but coach was like, just take a breath and just play ball. At the end of the day, just play.
So you feel like you're coming along pretty well, catching on. Still got obviously some things you've got to work on. What do you feel you need to improve on?
Me knowing exactly what to do. Like I know my assignment, just knowing how to run the routes and the time and just running them correct, knowing the quarterback what they plan to be right.
Malcolm, you obviously didn't go through spring practice, but you were here almost every single day watching the receivers and watching all those drills. Do you think that helped you?
Yeah, it did a lot. Me coming every spring practice and just watching what I was going to be doing. And Coach Dave was like, as long as you're here and watching, when you get here, it shouldn't be a big up step. So I came and watched everything. When I got here, it was kind of a little bit easy on me just knowing the little things and doing the little things. It's just going to give me some to play at the next level.
Those other three freshmen from in-state that you're with, Cam and Perry and Bryce, individually, what about each of those guys makes them a good football player?
We all have our different roles. Cam, he's the bigger receiver, so we just gonna throw him the ball up, like goal line. We're gonna throw him the ball. Perry, he's the powerful one. He's just gonna get by people and throw him by and get himself open. Bryce, he's the twitching one. He's gonna get in and out of his breaks quick, just run by people. And then me, you got me. I can do it all. So I'm probably the most explosive one out of the group. But I mean, we all explosive. We all got our different games. But when we all clicking as a receiver group, the offense is gonna win. So just us, just being who we is and playing how we play, it's gonna be big for the team.
Malcolm, you play mostly slot or outside? Which one do you like the best?
I like outside, but they got me playing slot. I mean, whatever the coaches want me to play or whatever I need to do to help the team win, I'm gonna do that.
You think you might be able to find some good matchups though in the slot?
Oh yeah. Put the safety on me, a linebacker, I'm gonna both ask him every time.
Cam was telling us that each one of you guys maybe have different strengths off the field as well. Like one of you guys is, I can't remember which one he said, one of you guys is really good at playing NCAA football. Another one of you guys is good at basketball. I think he said you just run everywhere.
Yeah.
what is the relationship of you guys like, and how nice is it to have, you know, three guys that are going through the exact same things you are each day?
It's a surreal feeling. With all us in-state receivers, I mean, before we all committed, we just talked to each other every day, and just us off the field, just becoming better teammates, knowing what each other do, telling each other what not to do. And Cam, he's probably the more laid back one, but he played a lot. And then you got Bryce, he's more like the father of the group. He's telling us no, don't do this. And then we got Perry, the best one that manned out of the group. And then me, I don't know. I just do everything. So yeah, that's it. And just us knowing each other and what each other would do at all times.
How much time do you guys spend together, you think?
At the practice, we at least three of us are with each other. If Perry not sleep, I'm with Bryce. Or if I'm not with Bryce, I'm with Perry. Or if we not all with each other, we probably not gonna sleep or going over plays. Or we all run going over plays with each other. So that's a good feeling. Going over plays and getting our stuff and knowing what we have to do to get on the field.
Not too far from Alex City from here. You gonna have a lot of people here watching you?
Yes, sir. The scrimmage, I had my sister and a couple of my friends home, and like every weekend I got damn near like 12 people down here in my room. So they just come down here and just hang and I'm telling them, as long as I got support, I'd be able to go out there and won't be worried about anything.
Malcolm Simmons, again, he says he can do everything, but he knows he is fast. He was saying as he was walking out, he hadn't met anybody who can catch him yet. So you hope that's the case. But yeah, he's got legit football speed. I mean, we've talked about his track accomplishments, but he is football fast as well.
Oh no, he is, and he was maybe the most surprising, the most surprising player from the scrimmage we got to see, just because, I mean, you'd seen glimpses of Malcolm, but to see him making those kind of plays in 7-on-7 and 11-on-11 situations was, at full speed, it's pretty incredible. And like you said, a confident young man for sure.
Mm-hmm. All right, we've got, when we get a chance, we'll switch to the other side of the ball and go with Charles Kelly. Charles Kelly is the safeties coach for the Tigers, and Dan had a chance to be among the guys that sat down with him. We'll let you hear some of his conversation when we come back again. We'd love for you to join in, though. 334-321-1390 here on the Friday Drive.
Hey, this is Kevin Tudhope, owner of Baumhauer's Victory Grill in Auburn. All of our spring sports seasons are coming to an end.
Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Drive here on this Friday afternoon. Bill and Dan here in the studio, Drew at the controls. And yes, among the many folks that we've had a chance to talk to here in the football preseason, got a chance with the defensive coaches this week, and Charles Kelly, former Auburn player under Coach Dye, has had quite a few prominent stops, but is glad to be back at his alma mater. And Dan and some other members of the media, well, they usually have two or three folks in there at the same time. So one of us will get one side of the room, one of us gets the other. And Dan had the pleasure of being there with Coach Charles Kelly.
How did you think the scrimmage went for your group?
You know, I thought, guys, that the first two groups, I felt, and we're doing a lot of rotations. I mean, there's no set depth chart right now, but I thought those first two groups played pretty consistent. We made some plays in the deep part of the field. The biggest thing we look for is, first of all, who plays with great effort, who's going to tackle. We got to have elite mental execution. You got to have guys that can think. So I felt like, you know, for what we threw at them, we adjusted pretty good. And, you know, but we still got a long way to go in camp.
What's it like having a guy like Darren? A lot of the guys have said that, you know, he feels like another coach on the field.
He's right.
Gonna, what's it like to coach a kid?
Well, first of all, he's a very instinctive player. You know, there's no substitute for experience. And, you know, as a coach, you like having a guy that's been in the heat of the battle, that, you know, because we're not on the field with them. They're out there communicating, anticipating things that change. So that's been really good. But the thing that impresses me more about him than anything, he does have those experiences, but, I mean, he comes to work every day very intentional about getting better at little things. And, you know, he told me, he said, Coach, I came here to develop. And, you know, that's my job, is to help him do that.
We saw Caleb and Sylvester Smith rotating at that other safety spot. What have you seen kind of out of the competition between them two, and, you know, just how would you describe it?
Well, I mean, we got a few guys. It's Caleb Wooten, you got Sylvester, you got Caleb Harris, you got T. Love. I mean, all those guys are competing. It's not just one or two. But I think Caleb Wooten has done a really good job. First of all, he had a great summer. He's come back. He's probably he's in the best shape that I've seen him. He runs very well. He understands the scheme. Sly, same way, had a good summer. Very instinctive player, very physical. You know, both of those. What I like about the group is they all bring something that's a little bit different, you know. So there's different ways, you know, that as they develop, that they might be able to help the team in certain ways.
Has anybody kind of separated themselves at that spot, or is it still too early?
You know, so on certain days, guys have, and on certain days, others have. And that's what we try to find, is the consistency. You know, consistency and performance over time, that's going to be the guys that we have to lean on in critical situations. But as I told them, hey, if we have a bunch of guys that, you know, that are consistent and can play, that's good for us, because it creates depth and it creates opportunities to play a lot more people.
A lot of players have singled out Thompson's leadership.
Yep.
Is that something that comes through day-to-day in practice?
Absolutely. And like I was just saying about JT, he's, you know, there's no substitute for experience. The only way you learn how to play this game is to play. But I think because of his experiences and ups and downs, I think it's, you know, he brings a different aspect to the players from a leadership role. And having that guy on the field that's been there and been through those experiences, that helps a lot. And I think the guys respect him a lot.
A couple players on this team you've coached before, Kite and Alabama and Robinson and,
right,
and Colorado. What is Auburn getting in those two guys based on what you see?
You know, I think, first of all, Jacquez, you know, he wasn't here in the spring, came in the summer, been very deliberate about just improving. We're working him in a couple of spots. You know, he's played really two spots in his career. He's mainly been a corner and a nickel. We're playing him at the nickel some, but we're also playing him at safety. He's pretty quick learner for not being there in the spring. He's picked up on some stuff. He's flashed at times, but his biggest thing is he's got to develop consistency too. Antonio, very athletic, really good cover guy, but again, consistency. Got to be consistent every play, because we say that in football, and it's not a cliche, but in the secondary, if you're not consistent, it's a touchdown. You know, a guy up front can be inconsistent, and, you know, nobody knows it. All right, they mess up in the secondary, I'm going to hear about it from my daughter, like, real quick.
You've been around Jacquez before.
Mm-hmm.
What do you like about his skill set? What is he bringing?
You know, he's got really good length. He's instinctive. He's fought some injuries throughout his career, but I think I think now he understands, like, taking care of his body, you know, in the off season. not only just the weights and the nutrition, the sleep, all that stuff. So, and you know, I think maturity. I mean, he's more mature. He's an older guy now, and maybe some of the things that he didn't pay attention to early, you know, he's probably doing that more now that I see. But he's really worked hard. I think even, you know, even today watching the film, I mean, he flashed a couple of times, and the guy was like, wow. You know, there you see flashes of it. It's just developing that. Can you do that on every down basis?
From a recruiting perspective, right now, in your opinion, why are kids buying an Auburn?
Well, first of all, I think it always starts at the top. You know, I think what Coach Freeze has done here of establishing and letting people know his vision for where Auburn can be and where they should be. I think the culture that he's created here, not only just to, you know, we're just not a transactional school, we're a transformational school where we help guys, you know, it's not the next 4 years of their life, it's the next 40 years of their life. You know, you want to help those guys transform. But at the same time, to be able to recruit the level of athlete that it takes to win in this conference. I think Coach does an amazing job of painting that vision. But, you know, listen, Auburn is a great place. It has great tradition. I was fortunate to be here at a time when we won a lot of football games, a lot of SEC championships. And I've always believed if you can do it once, you can do it twice. You can do it twice, you can do it. You know, but it will always be about the people that you recruit. And I think all of our coaches, too, Coach Freeze has set the vision, but there's total buy-in. There's no outliers. I mean, everybody is bought into that. And, you know, when you have an institution like Auburn, and the tradition that they've had, the players that have played here, you know, if you show that to players and show that you're committed to the right thing, you'll attract the right one. And listen, everybody's not going to come here. That's okay. Auburn's not made for everybody, you know. So, but I think that's the main thing is Coach's vision.
Charles, for you specifically, I mean, historically you've been regarded as one of the best recruiters in college football. What do you think it is for you, or what do you do well on the trail where you're able to get guys?
Well, first of all, and I appreciate you saying that, but I do believe this. I believe this with my whole heart. I believe recruiting is like raising a child. It takes a village to do it. And I've been very fortunate to be around good people, other good assistant coaches. It's never one coach that recruits a player. It's a whole bunch of guys. And I think probably what I try to do is get those guys that have influence with the players, get them involved as much as possible. And as I mentioned, you know, having a great head coach that sells the vision, that makes things, you know, that makes things everything in recruiting. And you got to work at it every day. You know, recruiting is something that you never can take a day off. You've got to be doing something every day in regards to recruiting. But that is the lifeblood of your program. There's three things we do in a, you know, every day. We evaluate, we recruit, and we develop. That's our job. And, you know, you're constantly doing that every day.
Sylvester redshirted last year, but he's in competition for some playing time this year. What's one of the most important things for a guy who, you know, gonna make that kind of jump?
Well, I think redshirting is good in a lot of aspects. It doesn't mean a guy doesn't have ability. It doesn't mean he doesn't have the skill set. Sometimes it's because of, you know, maybe an excess of guys in a position. But I think what the redshirt year does for a lot of guys, when they come into college football, the game is so fast. But that extra year of maturity helps everything slow back down. And it doesn't matter. Anytime you elevate a level that you're playing at, whether it's from high school to college or college to the NFL, it's getting the speed of the game down. So I think that's one of the things that will probably benefit him more than anything.
You mentioned Terrence too, somebody in competition there. Yeah. What have you seen out of?
You know,
I thought
T Love had a good summer. He's, you know, I, he probably weighs the same, but yeah, I think he's changed his body. But you know, he moves very well, runs very well. He's a smart guy. He has to work. Yeah, he's smart, understands what to do. He's got to be more of a communicator. You know, doesn't matter if you know what to do, everybody else has got to know. So we got, you know, those kinds of things. He has improved his coverage ability. You know, just because a guy's big doesn't mean he can't cover. And I've coached some big guys. They cover really good. I think he's done that. But, I go back. It's consistency in those three areas. It's consistency of effort, tackling, and execution. And you got to combine them all.
We saw him get a pick on Saturday. Caleb Harris, how can he help y'all in year one?
Well, first of all, Caleb is, you know, very competitive, very smart, very instinctive, learns very well, picks things up, comes out of a great program, which as a lot of our players do. He's been exposed to a lot of stuff in high school. Not the exact same thing that we do on defense, but similar concepts. But, you know, he's got very good eyes. He reacts. You know, your eyes tell your body what to do. I think, again, just making sure he understands what it takes to play consistently, you know, in this league, that's going to be the thing that does it. But I'm excited about what I've seen so far, and he's competing very well.
What have you seen from Kisley Faustin so far?
You know, I'll tell you, That just goes to show you, you know, I don't know where he ranked in recruiting or whatever, but, I mean, this kid has great change of direction, great lateral movement. He's tough. You know, we've played him a lot at the nickel spot. He's good in the slot. You know, he's had some ups and downs. And, again, I go back to these guys. It's just the consistency of – You know, you can't afford to, you know, have a bust or have a lack of effort on a play. Not in this league. People are too good. But I do think he competes every day. He's very coachable, as well as Caleb Harris there. I mean, they spend a lot of time. They listen. They take the coaching. And if he keeps doing that, I think he's got a chance to be a really good player.
Thanks,
Coach.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Coach Charles Kelly, as he's talking about the guys there at safety and nickel, interesting that he's got those guys. You know, I had sort of felt like, well, the nickel is more of a corner, but he's being coached. I mean, Crime Dog's got the outside guys, and then Charles has the safeties and the inside guys.
And the sense you get would be that after – and, you know, maybe moving Keontae inside, depending on, you know, what they look at as their corner options there would be there. But if something happened to Champ, I mean, it's all hands on deck between – I mean, Kayan seems like the one defensive back that they're not moving inside. They like
right.
him as an outside corner.
He is a cover corner.
Virtually yes. Every other defensive back on the team, corner and safety, I think would be a candidate to play some inside in the event of a – or at least
yeah,
would be
– interesting. I think the younger guys, they might be a little hesitant to just throw that much at them, but – I mean, I think they pretty much have to.
They did, and yeah, I mean, Champ was out there last year as a pretty right. young guy, you know, as a redshirt freshman defensive back in the games when Keontae was missing some time. So I think it's, you know, that could be where, you know, if
you've got the most experienced guy that he's got out there is Jaquez Robinson, though. I mean, that's
yes.
the other guy, and that's a guy that played for him at Colorado a year ago. So that's a guy I think that they might look at there in case.
Right. They have two veteran safeties they like. If they really liked one of the young options at safety, maybe you move one of the safeties into that spot if you think they could do it.
Well, he said Jaquez is working at nickel and safety.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much what he has played. All right, we need to get to our bottom of the hour break. We're a little behind. We'll do that. We'd love for you to join in. We'll get to the phones when we come back. 334-321-1390 as we continue with the Friday Drive.
Three. 1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Friday afternoon. Bill and Dan with Drew at the controls. And let's get to The Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar and Bill. Hey, Bill.
Hey, guys. I was listening to the show, and I know, Bill, you said that you're not going to Athens this year. And I said
the family's not going to Athens.
Yeah, Bill might make the trip.
Yeah, I might, but.
Okay, yeah, well, and, you know, it's, I said after the last trip I went, I guess about two trips ago, and I think that was, we really should have won that game, and quarterback threw a pick six at beginning of third quarter, and they all went downhill after that. I think that was Kirby's first year. Oh, we really should have won that game.
You're talking, Sean White?
2016 game in Athens.
Yeah, we should have won that game. I think the week before, the running back, that's just an out-of-nowhere year, got hurt against Vanderbilt, and of course we didn't have anything when we got down there. But I'm going to go back this year. It's you know, at my age, I don't know how many trips I got left back to Athens. Win or lose, it can be a fun trip. You just have to kind of take it as it is. Last trip I had there, the people really weren't that belligerent. They just expected to beat us out.
Yeah, I guess we were on a different side of the stadium or something, because the last couple of times it's been
a... Because if you tell me you got a bad experience, I'll believe it. But I'm going to go. I'm going to go to Kentucky. Kentucky's a good trip.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. My wife's looking forward to that one.
Yeah, I'll go to Kentucky, and I'm going to go to Alabama this year. I know I'm a homer, but I've just got a feel we'll play a lot better in Athens and Tuscaloosa than people think we will. And, you know,
I wouldn't be surprised.
There's an old saying among coaches: if you keep a game close to the fourth quarter, anything can happen.
Oh, yeah, and I don't disagree. I wouldn't be surprised at all.
That would be a huge step. And again, you don't want moral victories or anything like that. But I think being competitive on the road against really good teams would be a step in the right direction. Because, Bill, I would say more often than not over the last 5-6 years, certainly last year when you talk about the LSU game, like when Auburn went on the road and played good teams. Some of these games were not remotely competitive.
Right.
Like that's been the story of a lot of Auburn's, you know, last 10, 15 games on the road against teams in the top 10. I would think they've been, you know, predominantly pretty one sided losses.
And I went to the LSU game last year, and I was really disappointed in the lack of competitive effort, or should I say competitiveness. I'm sure maybe the effort was there, and they. But I don't think LSU was all that great last year, but we just didn't show up, and you know. But I will give
LSU won that game. LSU won that game by knockout in the first 4 minutes, right? Like you can't actually win a football game by knockout, you know, very early on. But
it felt like it.
It sure felt like it.
And trust me, I was there, and it was over at halftime. But you know, you paid your money, you went, you enjoyed it, and. That's just the way it is. But that was a team, again, that played Georgia awfully well, should have beaten Alabama, but in between lost to New Mexico State. Mm-hmm. In my opinion, that was a team that had not found its culture. They didn't prepare for a New Mexico State like they should have. But maybe this team this year will. You have to prepare for every – like what you're saying, you said, Bill, a day with Pat Dye, I said, if you don't think Vanderbilt's a big game, lose
yeah,
it.
Yeah, lose it. That's right.
and you'll find out. And you didn't think New Mexico State was a good big game, mm-hmm. and guess what? You lost it. So maybe that's a lesson that can be learned from this team moving forward. So now I'm going to go to Kentucky and Alabama, and I'm still – teeter on Georgia, but I'll probably go. But I think that this team, last year's team, was just a couple of breaks from being 8-4, and they wound up, you know, losing a game to Mexico State they shouldn't have lost. And then in Alabama.
Alabama's a game they shouldn't have lost.
And Alabama was right there to win. And that's the difference between a very disappointing season and overachieving. But you just got to learn how to get enough players who expect to win those small games. You can't. Alabama State, you have to prepare for one of them like they're the best team in the country.
Well,
you just have to. If you
well, you're gonna have to. You need to prepare for Alabama A&M, though, right? It's important because that's the team you're playing.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I guess I was just trying to make a point.
Prepare for every one of them.
No, Bill. I know
this is a team. This is a team that is more talented. And you talk about a veteran team. It's not all from time at Auburn, but I looked at my when we were talking about depth charts and things like that. Auburn has 30 seniors on this team. So there are a lot of guys. The ones that have been here have been through some tough times, and the other ones that are coming in here are talking about setting the standard for the future. So I think you've got some really good leadership. Now they've got to get out and show that they mean what they – you know, they got to walk the walk. They're talking the talk right now.
The way Auburn played – the way Auburn played, Bill, and I think especially the first three quarters against – Ole Miss, Bama, and Georgia last year at home. Like, I don't know what – I have no idea the exchange rate as to what that means when Auburn goes to Athens or Tuscaloosa this year. But I do think it should give you hope that Oklahoma and Texas A&M could be very competitive games at Jordan-Hare Stadium this year because of, you know, we saw last year, you know, it seemed like playing at Jordan-Hare Stadium helped Auburn overcome a massive talent advantage to keep games that maybe shouldn't have been very close or didn't seem like they were going to be very close into very competitive games into the fourth quarter. And I don't think the talented, like I would say the gap last year's team, Bill, like think about like, the gap between 2023 Auburn and 2023 Ole Miss, or 2023 Auburn and 2023 Georgia, like it doesn't feel like 24 Auburn. Maybe A&M and Oklahoma are better. Like they both have better odds to make the playoff right now than Auburn.
The gap is closer,
but
the gap is narrower between 2024 Auburn and those 24 teams
versus the top five teams that came to Jordan-Hare Stadium last year.
Yeah, and like I said, I think the team last year was in transition from a bad experience year before to a better one last year, and they just didn't know how to win those games. And you're right; they've got to go to Kentucky, they've got to go to Missouri, and those are you've got to win one of those. And when you do win one of those, and you learn what it takes to win a game like down the road, I think we'll be on the right track. So, anyway, that's my two cents for the day, guys. Enjoy the show.
Good hearing from you, Bill. Have a good weekend. 334-321-1390, and we need to get to our final break.
Great stuff from Bill. I appreciate it.
Yep, good to hear from him. We'll be right back here on the Friday Drive.
Attention large property owners and adventure seekers. If you're looking for a reliable and powerful